Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Frontside Podcast. This is episode 111. I'm Robert DeLuca, a software developer here at the Frontside, and I'll be your episode host. Today, we're going to be discussing accessibility in single-page apps. With me as co-hosts are Charles Lowell. Hey, Charles.
What is up, Robert?
And Will Wilsman. Hey, Will.
Yo.
Sounds like we're about to drop a diss track. It's not going to be dissing anybody here. We're going to be talking about helpful things with accessibility in single page apps. So before we get into like the nitty gritty of accessibility and single page apps, because we're going to get into some deep stuff, I think this is, I want to cover a lot of like how, because I know a lot of accessibility things are usually about why you should be doing it. And then they touch on light things like, hey, you should be using all attributes for your images. But for single page apps, I think we need to go further.
It always ends up like, okay, then draw the rest of the accessibility owl.
Yeah. Here's your two circles and the all tags are your circles. And then the rest of the freaking owl is focus management and everything else that comes with it. So before we get there, what is accessibility? And more, I guess, if we trim the giant umbrella down a little bit from everything that is accessibility, that can be physical space things like wheelchair accessible ramps or things like that. What about just technology?
I mean, yeah, people need assistive tech just to interact with technology, such as like switches or keyboards. And obviously screen readers is a big one. But, you know, when it comes to the software itself, you could even talk about colors and people are colorblind. So, you know, red might not be red to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Speaking from experience there.
Right. Yeah, I'm colorblind. Red is brown to me.
Mm-hmm. Things like hearing, you know, all of it, right? So it really is like just designing it in such a way that it can be used by as many people as possible.
Yeah. Right. And
that includes like your mom, who may not be the best with technology, but you know, she still needs to pay her bills online or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And for context to listeners that might not know, my mom is 100% blind. So that's kind of where that comes from.
Right. But my mom is not, and she has all kinds of problems paying her bills online.
Yes, same with my mom.
And so that also falls under the category of accessibility, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, accounting for age and culture.
We're blending into the why of accessibility, which is perfect. And one of the things that's such a good segue, because what people are starting to realize, and I think why accessibility is really starting to catch wind and get some traction, is because a lot of people that grew up in the technology age grew like using technology a lot. So like our parents probably did not use technology heavily, right? That's definitely the case for my dad. He still has a flip phone and he says he's a low-tech man living in a high-tech world and just refuses to pick up technology. But those are the people that just didn't use technology. But now we have a lot of people that grew up with technology and use it a lot, and they're aging into more disabilities and they're going to need that accessibility, which I think is really interesting to think about, because that's a lot of buying power that's going to start moving in that needs accessibility, right?
That's true, right? Like I know I'm going to need glasses pretty soon. So, you know, colors and fonts are going to mean a heck of a lot more to me in the next 5 years than they have over the last 20.
Yep, exactly. And that's going to be huge for that. And that's one piece of the why. So like, what are the other reasons that you would pick up accessibility other than like people saying that it's morally correct, right? I don't like starting off conversations for accessibility because it's the thing that you should be doing.
Right. Like, I think it goes to even like user experience, like power users that don't like using the mice or mouse. Like that's me. I really prefer to just use my keyboard for everything. So like when the new Firefox browser came out and I couldn't navigate through the menus the way I was used to, I went back to Chrome.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's interesting.
Hey, well, segue, you're gonna have to show me. I still have not found a good workflow for navigating tabs with the keyboard without it just kind of twisting my wrists all out of shape.
Yeah.
So you'll have to share that with me. But again, that's another thing. Like that's an impediment to like, that sits between me and the application.
Which is really interesting. You're getting into like keyboard navigation and focus management, which is really the crux of accessibility for screen reader users and switch users.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is that by, in this case, you know, including good keyboard and focus management in your application, e.g. making it accessible to screen readers, you're at the same time enabling your power users. And I think that's a great point, is that you're actually, by introducing these very low friction workflows, you're actually going to be enabling other parts of your customer base and not just catering to one, and that there are ripple effects throughout your system. And
it makes it better for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not just people who need it, but people who don't know they need it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I think about the WCAG guidelines as, or the WCAG spec as user experience guidelines, right? They're not telling you how to implement a thing specifically for a screen reader. They're telling you how to implement it in a way that works for everyone, regardless of what ailment they have, right? It could be a temporary ailment. It could be a permanent ailment where they have to use a screen reader, or any kind of ailment that you can think of. They're not considering just one use case. It's a broad thing that shows how you can make your application better for everyone. And I think that that's a better way to look at the WCAG spec than like, I need to read through this and make sure that this autocomplete works for a screen reader, right? If you look at the guidelines, they're not telling you just for a screen reader. They're telling you how to make it work for a switch, someone who is colorblind or who is using dictation software. I kind of tend to look at that as a UX guideline, which really helps me build a better app overall. Because when you nail down that user flow, everyone benefits from it, right? Because it's pretty well thought out at that point.
Right. I like that too. And I think that, you know, thinking of it as a user experience and making sure that you have a complete user experience is a good way to think about it, because it kind of separates the concerns of, okay, I've got HTML, right? But is my application really HTML, or is it, you know, is it a set of workflows and the data over which those workflows operate? And it really forces you to think, okay, you know, my application is not a set of React components or web components or, you know, Ember components or what have you, but it really is, there's a deep structure to it. And it makes you kind of shine a light on that deep structure and try to map its surface, so that then if you know it, if you really, really know it and you capture it, then you can represent it in any medium. And so I think it's just a win, you know, not just for one niche group of users, but also for all of your users. And then also for your future users that you don't have, because your application is designed better and is going to work when, who knows, maybe there's some new interface or some new medium, some new device that comes out that hasn't even been invented yet. But if you really have a strong internal representation of what your application is, you're going to be able to be the first to move to that market.
Right. And like I said earlier, people are starting to age into needing accessibility things. So if you need a dollar to justify it, that's going to be a big reason coming up. And it could be as simple as making sure, so as a part of the new WCAG 2.1 spec, there is a Zoom, I forget what the success criteria is, number is, but the new criteria says that your app basically needs to be responsive. And that kind of maps directly to what you said earlier, Charles, which is like, you're going to need glasses soon, and fonts and being able to zoom is going to be really important. And we see that just pop up everywhere. Like when we give, to give a counter example of not just for accessibility, like you need it for glasses, but the other side of that could be like when we give demos on low resolution projectors or screencasts or anything, when we zoom the screen, the app should still be usable and still be demo. Like you should still be able to demo it.
Right.
And that's just something that like you have both sides of that, where right. accessibility kind of works out for everybody. People on the call probably don't need glasses, but to see that tiny screen that's being shared, you should be able to zoom that.
Right. And I mean, you know, I'm just kind of restating what you said, but I want to make sure that to call it out explicitly, because it was definitely an aha moment for me, is that you basically, if you build yourself an accessible website, you've built it so that it works on mobile devices, not, you know, like projectors and mobile devices too. So you've kind of killed two birds with one stone, and you don't have to make a special effort, because zooming in the screen is tantamount to viewing it on a phone or viewing it on a tablet.
Yeah, we mentioned it earlier about like accessibility in physical space. And, you know, one of those things is being able to access something from anywhere, like no matter the device that person is using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a lot of the why of accessibility, right? And I think we did a pretty good job of staying away from the moral argument, right? Because morally, we all know it's the right thing to do. But a lot of the times, it's not in front of you. It's hard to do. And I want to make sure that you don't feel bad if you're not doing building accessibility into your apps. It's not easy. I also don't like it when people get up and say that accessibility is easy. Just do this, because it's not.
If it was easy, everybody would do it.
Exactly. And I always come back to accessibility being just like UX, user experience, because if it were easy, everybody would have really great user experience too. It's hard. It's a hard thing to boil down into to simplify, right?
Right. And you need to do it. Like every other aspect, kind of non-functional requirement. I say non-functional requirement. That's a little bit of a contradiction in terms, but it becomes very hard if you haven't done it from the beginning, right? If you didn't start with an accessible app.
Yes.
You weren't thinking about that, or you inherited the app, or, you know, it just wasn't on your radar for whatever reason. Going back, if you've got a code base that's 2 years old, going back and trying to make it accessible is extremely hard. I mean, it's expensive.
Yeah, it's going to cost more in terms of money and time to add it in after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I spent a year at Visa helping out on Visa Checkout, and there was some accessibility considered in the designs, but a lot of the time my feedback wasn't just like, yeah, sprinkle some Aria attributes on there and you're good. It was like, do we really need a carousel here to represent your list of cards? Because it's really hard to navigate around that. And a lot of the times it ends up boiling up to like, is this the best way we can represent this data? Is this the best way we can navigate and build this user flow?
Right. And a lot of times, and if the answer is no, right? It's so painful, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all that work that was put into building that carousel and all the components that built that carousel together is thrown out because it's just not a pattern that should be used there, right? So yeah, doing it after the fact is really hard and really expensive, and it usually ends up in refactoring anyways.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I just wanted to point that out because a lot of people find themselves in that situation where they're staring down a pretty big cost. And so it's, you know, the reasons why your app may not be accessible are many, many and good. And yeah, you shouldn't feel bad
if you find yourself
in that situation.
No, it's just like any, so I gave a talk at Nodevember a couple of years ago called Accessibility Debt. And it's just like any technical debt. Your app's going to have it. It's okay. Don't get beat up about it. And especially like if anybody's trying to beat you up over it, don't listen to them. It really is just like any other kind of form of technical debt. It's something that you'll have to deal with, and it's just something you have to work through. It's not world ending, right? And it's just another problem that you have to work through. So what are some things, like everybody usually talks about like the things that you can do, the basics for making your app more accessible, like using alt attributes. And instead of doing a div with an on-click handler, just use a button. Or, you know, don't overuse Aria attributes. Are there any other things that I missed there that you, like the basics of accessibility, right?
I mean, the biggest is like the HTML structure. I mean, screen readers and like other assistive tech were built, you know, with the standards in mind. So if you're doing non-standard things like putting divs in an H1 and adding Aria attributes within there, you're not going to have a great time.
Right, or like splattering Aria roles all over the place. Probably not a good idea. That'll be harder to debug. Also, fun fact, Aria roles, while you can implement directly to the spec, you may still have bugs across the different screen reader combinations or assistive tech combinations. So that's fun.
Right. So keep it super simple is what I'm hearing. Like use semantic markup. If you're going to, you know, introduce a custom button, still make sure that it's a button.
Yeah.
Use the platform.
Use the platform, right? Don't fight the platform. The best example of that is people implementing their own select boxes, right? That's like a classic example.
Will and I's life has centered around that for a little while. It's so true. It's usually the first thing people go to grab to re-implement because selects are just ugly. And for a long time, even now, like you, I think Firefox has the ability for you to style select options now. Like you can change the color and the font, but you can't fix, like you can't style that, the pop-up that comes. That's usually just system dialog, which a lot of designers don't really like. So that's usually the first thing that people go to implement. And that's usually actually the first thing that stops somebody from signing up, right? A lot of signup forms, like I see, if your date of birth is in a select format, that probably will hinder somebody that uses assistive tech from signing up.
Right. Yeah. And then, right, you've just basically bounced that entire person. And so that's the thing, is people don't appreciate the cost. And this gets into the whole concept of accessibility debt, is, you know, how much money would that person or those group of people have actually brought into your site versus the cost that you spent, you know, redoing that select box. And so you might be thinking, oh, it was, you know, it only took this developer actually 2 weeks. But when you actually look at the actual cost over the course of your application, you're not factoring that into the decision to go with the custom select box. And it's almost like, just in our experience, right, it's just the truly low cost option for quality of experience, like that trade-off there is almost always going, I mean, almost invariably going with the platform select, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Your secret sauce and the best UX that you're going to provide is not going to be a nicely styled select box. And honestly, yeah, like seriously, that was a battle that I had to fight a lot, was if you really want to implement a custom widget, decide if this is what you want to spend your time on, because custom widgets aren't just quick and easy things that you implement. You're not going to implement a select that's fully accessible across all the AT combos in a couple days.
Without a lot of work, right?
Yeah, you're going to fall down a huge rabbit hole.
Yeah, and it's just you're committing to that work over the lifetime of your application.
Exactly. You have to maintain that now. So if you implement custom checkboxes and custom radios and custom inputs out of content editable for some reason, I've seen that.
I think a big one I see is like custom date pickers.
Oof. I just had a rant about that.
The date pickers are hard, and there's not really a good option. You just have to open your eyes to the true cost.
Right, exactly. That's what I was trying to explain. It's like you have ownership over this now, and you now have to maintain this, and you can't regress.
Right. And if you do regress, it's your neck that gets choked.
Yes. Good way to put it. So we talked a lot about things that are just general accessibility, right? But nothing specific to single page apps. So I do want to say, like, you can run, so a lot of the other things that people recommend is, like, if you're using React, use like the JSX ESLint plugin to help you analyze if you're writing any JSX that might not be accessible, or use like HTML code sniffer or Axe to statically analyze the DOM that you have. Those tools are great. I see a lot of people cite those things as like, hey, look, this automated checker says I'm accessible, so I'm accessible. And that's not the case, and especially in single page apps. So you can have 100% passing automated checkers, but your app also could be 100% broken. And why is that?
I don't know.
I'm lobbing the router question here.
So I guess that would just be due to routing. Like, you know, SPA's single page applications, they handle their own routing, whereas static websites and whatnot, you know, the routing's handled just by URLs in the browser and reloading pages.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are probably other major differences between single page apps, but the biggest thing is the routing is managed by the client, the JavaScript. And on a server rendered page, you click a link, it's going to re-render the entire page for that next page. And the screen reader and the browser know exactly what to do with that. They'll put the focus back at the top of the page and start working through the page for you. But with single page apps, you're just replacing a piece of the DOM, and the screen reader has no idea of what's going on. In that case, so an automated checker cannot check for this. It cannot tell you if your routes are accessible. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because this is never talked about, I don't see, in accessibility talks. And this is the thing that actually is most broken and makes your app pretty much unusable to anybody that's using assistive tech. Like, there's ways that people, if they're savvy, can navigate around it. But if they don't know what's going on, they're going to think, all right, I press this button and nothing happened, so I'm just going to leave now because it's not working.
Yep. There's a great great video that you pointed to me to of, I believe, a guy from the UK who has recorded a bunch of his experiences using websites and apps.
Yes. I'll have to dig that up right. And put it in the show notes.
Yeah, those are great to watch because you really get it.
Yeah, and that's a really unique case because he's really savvy. I believe, I could be wrong, but I think he might have said that he's definitely worked in tech somehow.
Right. He knows the workarounds, right? Like, yes. He knows the workarounds, and he knows like if these things, but he's, you know, in some of the cases, like if I didn't work in tech, there's no way that I would be able to use this website.
Yeah. And it's because, so this is kind of the crux of, like, if you ever listen to anybody that is an accessibility consultant, they'll say, you will never, ever be able to automate accessibility. And it's because, and this is why I tie accessibility so much to user experience. Would you ever have a user experience test that can tell you in a binary fashion, yes or no, that your user or that your app has a great user experience? No.
Right.
Because it's pretty subjective.
How it made your users feel, right?
Yeah.
It made my users feel great.
Accessibility is like that because there's a lot of context that you have to carry around. It's all about context. When I transition from this page to the next thing, does the user have enough context from where they're going or where they're coming from to where they're going to be able to operate on that page, right? Is there enough information there for them to achieve the task they want? That is pretty much the crux of why, like, there's no binary yes or no for that because it's contextual. It varies from person to person. But you do your best to make sure that works and that you provide enough information from them to do something. So that's kind of single page apps as a crux. So we kind of and this is why we have a philosophy of like testing as a whole, right? We don't test components individually because, again, you can make all of your components individually accessible there, but as a whole, they might not work together because you're not providing enough context in the entire page. So we did this in one of the apps that we work on, which is open source. So we can link to the PR that Will wrote for this. And I wrote an entire routing documentation around like our philosophy and the different things that we tried. How did we manage the focus in that application? And I'm kind of just going to lob it over to you, Will, since you did the work. Like, do you want to give context of like eHoldings and how that all kind of came together?
Yeah. So one of the features of the app is these panels. You know, it's like this three-panel system. When you click an item in a list, a third panel pops up. And this goes back to the context thing where if you're using a keyboard and you can't see the screen, you click an item in a list, how do you know that third panel popped up? You know, the solution isn't for a component. You know, the component can't be responsible for this. Like, the list can't focus the item it opens or vice versa. So this is definitely an application concern where we needed to check against the route and see whether or not the pane is opening or was already open or wasn't open before. And, you know, when this pane opens for the first time, you just focus it. And that gives a lot of the context that the user needs when they click it. Like, they click an item in the list, it focuses this third pane, and they know they're on a third pane.
Right. And we didn't even just focus, like, the entire div, right? We focused the heading of the thing that you selected.
Yeah, because, you know, focusing the div, like, it might read something off, but not all the time. So, you know, the main thing we're focusing when that third pane opens is the heading to let them know that, hey, the item you clicked, you are now on that page and reading that heading. And this is the same thing that would happen if you like loaded up that page statically, and the screen readers would usually just focus on that first heading.
Right. And that helped a lot because, so, and for a little bit more context in that, the middle pane, so there's like kind of a master detail thing going on here. And in the middle pane there that we have, it's an infinite scrolling list. So if you select one of the, so you have different things there, and one of them is like a package. If you select a package, and without the focus management and focusing on that heading, you would have to go through every single package that's in that list, which could be 1,000 of them, before you actually get over to the pane that you just opened, because, you know, source order, you have to go through each one of those. So
yeah, and the same thing is true for power users, not just screen readers, is like if they wanted to use tab, once that pane opened, they'd have to tab through the entire list.
Exactly. So it wasn't keyboard accessible. And it made it really hard to navigate around without a keyboard or with a keyboard because, yeah, the focus just wasn't being managed. So there was a lot of work that we did there. So I want to focus on the routing situation there, because if you can't navigate around with a keyboard in your single page app, well, like you click a link and it's not selecting the next thing that should be focused and you provide the right amount of context, your app probably won't be usable without a lot of trial and error to a user, which depending on what your product is, they may not have a lot of patience for trial and error, right?
Yeah.
It's really important to try and nail down the routing situation. And there are some frameworks and things out there that can do it. So in the app that we were talking about, it's a React app and we use React Router, but we didn't actually really hook into the router to handle that, right? And that's because React Router doesn't provide very much information.
Yeah. You can think of React Router as more of an outlet system where your routes can render anything anywhere on the page. And that's kind of dangerous with accessibility. And that's kind of the reason that React Router can't handle accessible things very well, because at any point, the route can just change the button on the page to look like something else.
Yeah, it could just pop in and pop out. There's no deeper model, right? There's not.
Yeah, it's there's like no how, tree.
Right. Like, there's the internal
there's a component
state.
Tree. Yeah.
Right. Ahead, the internal. No. There is the internal state of where what is happening is completely opaque. You can kind of only analyze the second and third order effects of the React tree.
Right, and especially if you have nested route components, it's really hard to determine. Like, you can't just do one of the things that I've seen that people do is like focus on mount, which you can't. That's a very naive approach, because what if you have three nested routes? They're all going to focus on mount, and the last one that mounts wins, and that's a focus for which nobody wins.
And y'all tried that, right?
Yes. Yeah. So that's part of the document that I wrote up. We tried three different approaches, and we ended up landing on something because we were using React Router that was more of like an application state thing. So we were checking props because we knew what the user flow was. We knew what the user, when they come to this page, is trying to accomplish. So we're able to kind of figure out from like where they came from and where they're going through props and focus the right things for them.
Yeah, one of the examples of that, like we talked about the third pane opening and it focusing the heading inside. But, you know, what happens when you close that third pane? You kind of lose context again. So, you know, we had the problem. We have to focus the previous list item that was active, because, you know, if you focus back at the top of the list, you know, they've essentially lost their place in the list of results. So in that case, like, we couldn't use on mount. You know, that list item is already mounted. We have to listen to props, and we have to look at the route through these props to determine if that third pane was open, if it just closed, and if an item in the list is active, it should have focus. And so, yeah, right. It's a lot of logic going on. Yeah. Like, you have to really understand your app in order to make it a very good accessible app. You can't just sprinkle in ARIA attributes and focus on mount everywhere and, you know, think that it'll work fine because you're accessible. And you have to really know the flow.
Right. All those signposts point towards having a deeper application state, a deeper understanding of your application than just the render tree.
Yes.
At that point, it's too late. And so by that, I'm definitely lobbing a a Reach / Ember router.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about like React Router, and we can't really be too accessible with it. But, you know, the creator of React Router did go out, and there is now Reach Router. So, Robert, like, have you heard any good things about that? You're the accessibility expert here.
So I haven't played with it myself. So what Reach Router does is it has some things that were lost from the React Router 3 to 4 transition, I think, and also implements some, it's actually accessible routing, right? Which is nice because it comes out of the box. You don't have to implement it. I haven't played with it. I know Gatsby has implemented that for their V2. That's their default router now, which makes me really happy because a lot of static sites that were being built with Gatsby were very inaccessible and broken, which made me sad. But now they're not with V2. So I haven't played with Reach Router, but one of the things that I think it provides is what was missing from React Router was transition hooks. And it has a concept of like where you're going from and to, for your routes, which really helps figure out what you need to focus. The one thing I will say about Reach Router, and I'm sure it's got to be configurable somewhere, but I haven't really looked. And the demos that I saw, they were just focusing the div of the content that's being rendered. Like it kind of just wraps it with a generic div with a tab index -1 and then focuses it. If you have a lot of content that's inside of that div, it probably will be confusing, but at least it manages the focus somewhere. You know, you're not off in a no man's land. You have no idea what's going on. At least it focuses that. But if you want to really nail the experience to be better, I would recommend trying to figure out what you should focus inside of that route that you just transitioned to. What is the best thing? And I think there were for Reach Router, so that's for React. There are other things out there for other frameworks. So like I am on the Ember accessibility team that's out there, and we have Ember A11Y, which just provides you a focusing outlet for you to be able to just drop into your app. And then when the route changes, it does the same thing. It focuses the wrapping div of that outlet that was just rendered. So I wanted to emphasize when we were talking about the eHoldings work that we did, that we were focusing the heading, because that told you exactly where you're at and what package you're on or what thing you're on. And you know the name of it, and now you know how you can go and navigate through that.
But it is conceivable. So how would you do that with the Ember router? Would you just introduce some way to delegate down to a particular component? Like when I'm rendered into an outlet, focus on this component?
That would be interesting. I actually don't know. It's been a long time since I've messed around with the Ember router and Ember accessibility. It's definitely, it was a great first step, and that's where it kind of came from. I think there needs probably to be just some work done to help implement what you want to focus. That's kind of where I was going with when we were first exploring the React router stuff in eHoldings, was I wanted to have this like high order component that knew of your routing tree, and it knew where you're coming from and where you're going.
Right.
And then you would, from there, it would just tell you, okay, this is the route that we're going to, and there needs to be focus management done. Like if this prop exists, then you can pick inside of that component what you want to focus. So it leaves it up to the implementer of what they need to focus, but it could be probably just like a fallback to just the general div, right? Because that's not right. Bad. And it's a good first step. But yeah, there needs to be a little bit of work there to get that done, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but it is worth pointing out that by starting from a position of having a externalized application state via like the route structure in an Ember application, you know, you're starting 95% of the way there. So, you know,
absolutely,
an Ember application, at any point, you know where you are. And during a transition, you know where you're starting and where you're going to end up. And you know when you leave and you know when you get there.
Yeah. Having the Ember route pivot handler there, like where you're pivoting from and to, is just so nice. And it kind of made it click together a lot easier.
Right. And so it kind of makes me wish that there was, so, you know, Reach Router looks interesting, but it's, as I understand, it's still couched in React components. And, you know, it feels to me like this is a problem that ought to be solved. It ought to be framework agnostic, like, because, you know, if I use something like Reach or I use something like some other routing library for another framework, you know, some other tool might come out that I want to use and I shouldn't be locked in.
Right. Like, what if I really like Redux Little Router?
Right.
Then I have to make a choice between Redux state that I like or accessibility.
Right. And so exactly. And that feels like a false dichotomy to me. And so, you know, what I would want to be looking for is a platform independent or framework independent routing library that really just helps you represent your application state and, you know, the concrete state in which your application is in at any moment, and then also be able to represent the transitions between those states fully and completely. And then it seems like if you had that, you could wire, you know, you could embed that into any framework.
Right. That would be really nice to have, just like pull it off the shelf and help you out there.
We don't so have if anybody that, though. Listening, anybody listening, you know, who wants, something to do for the next 18 months, wants a nice thank. It won't be, no one will thank you for 18 months, but go ahead and get on that.
Right.
We'll give you lots of thanks then.
I'll even pair with you. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. No, seriously, I would love to be a part of that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And so to kind of tie it back to other things, like I don't know too much about Angular, but I'm sure that there's solutions out there to help with Angular. I know Marcy Sutton used to do a lot of work in the Angular world. So I'm sure there's something out there that helps with that. I just don't know off the top of my head right now. But I do remember when I wrote a Medium think piece. No, I wrote a little Medium blog post about how all single page apps or routers are broken. I was pleasantly surprised by Vue. Vue brings its own router, and that their router has a concept of before each. So before each route transition, you can run some code, and that really helped with implementing the live the announcer pattern where you use aria live to announce something. But even beyond there, if you wanted to dig in there, you could probably figure out where you're transitioning from and to, and give that next route some kind of attribute that says this needs to be focused. Figure out what you need to focus there, and then inside that route, you can focus whatever you want. So I thought that was really awesome, and that's kind of the crux of what I was missing from React Router, right? I wanted the concept of knowing where I'm going or where I'm coming from and where I'm going, and that would help with everything. But unfortunately, that kind of just didn't exist because they're just components. For better or for worse, they're just components.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the world is so much more than just components.
Yeah, a little bit off topic. I think it's kind of funny how React kind of just shoved everything into the Vue layer. Mm-hmm. Let's just make it all a component.
Yeah, well, it's very easy.
Yeah, until it's not. But
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's easy, but it's not simple.
So that's a lot of talking about how routes need to be done and what you can kind of do to manage focus. It's really about managing the context and how you can provide the most context for somebody to operate on that information, right? Can they complete this thing? So what can you do to make sure that you've done this properly? What steps can you take to make sure that you actually are accessible and that your routes work?
Manually testing with a screen reader is probably the biggest thing, you know?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is really watching someone who uses assistive tech on a regular basis use your application and then trying to use it yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
you can get a little bit of this yourself, right? But then it's kind of like someone who's never used a mouse before trying to learn something new. What really helps is seeing someone who's good at it and see them, you know, see how their expectations are either being met or not being met.
Yeah, that's definitely the best way. Is if you can find somebody that actually relies on assistive tech, there's nothing that beats that kind of feedback. Even if they get to your app and they're really confused, I see some people that just dismiss it because, oh, they just don't understand. No, that is the best feedback you can actually get. If they don't understand what's going on, you have
problems. That's on you.
Yeah, that is going to be what happens for everybody that uses that. Well, maybe not everybody, right? Because everybody has different experiences, but it's probably going to be a thing that pops up everywhere. But if you don't have access to people that are actually using assistive tech regularly and are pros at it, WebAIM provides really great tutorials for how to use a screen reader. If you're using a Mac, you have a screen reader built in, and you can use that. It's called VoiceOver. If you ever want to turn it on or turn it off, it's Command F5.
I think you might have to have that shortcut enabled, though.
Really? I'm pretty sure it's by default.
I thought I had to enable mine, but I could be wrong.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
They've
got a great tutorial too. It notices the first time you turn it on. So it tries to help you navigate bullet lists and select boxes and input fields and check boxes and all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah. It gives you a little bit of a boot camp. But WebAIM also helps with specific to websites and stuff. Because one of the things that we ran into while working on the eHoldings project is they were transitioning from a native app to a web app. And there are just things that you can do in a native app that you cannot do on a web app. So just keep that in mind also when you're testing. There's just things that'll behave differently. Like, you're not going to have a lot of crazy key shortcut commands to go to like, you're not going to press Command F to get to the search box if your app has a prominent search box, because that is going to clobber a bunch of other assistive tech key commands. So WebAIM is really going to help with giving you the tutorial of how to test a web app, and many different screen readers, right? So they have it for JAWS, they have it for NVDA, they have it for VoiceOver iOS, they have it for TalkBack, which is the Android screen reader. So there's a lot of really good resources there for you to start using a screen reader and test with your app. I highly recommend with using it with a screen off. You gain a lot of context by looking ahead of your cursor.
It's true.
The example that I usually give to people is, like, I worked on Visa Checkout and went through that checkout flow pretty much every day for a year. And 8 months in, even then, turning off the screen, I was still lost. Even though I knew what each screen was and what each component was there, I would find myself confused of, like, what just happened? And it's because sometimes you'll get into something and, like, you have a dropdown that sets the focus inside of the dropdown. And then the dropdown disappears from the DOM and your focus is in nowhere. And you're like, what is going on? What am I doing? I don't even know where I'm at. And then you turn your screen back on, you're like, oh, now I know what's going on.
Right. I mean, it really is a lot like interacting with your application as though you were interacting with Siri or Alexa, but with the keyboard instead. Instead of voice commands. And that's actually, that's an excellent point. I mean, you know, we would understand if, you know, where would Amazon be, you know, if Alexa couldn't successfully navigate those situations. And, you know, counterpoint or the flip side of that is if you model your application, your web application in such a way that it can handle that type of serial interaction instead of the highly parallel environment of being able to perceive, you know, huge amounts of information concurrently, like you can on the screen. If we're effectively, you know, serialized, that means that you could represent your application through nothing but voice commands.
Yeah. Did you provide enough context for me to build this mental map? Is really what it boils down to.
Yep.
Which I always thought was really interesting because I always wanted to know, like, how my mom visualizes what a website looks like, because it's wildly different than any of us. She's never been able to see what a website looks like, right? So does it look like a bunch of nodes and graphs and, like, webs connecting to each other and how things piece together? It's just a different way. But it's not only about screen readers, right? Like, you can use a keyboard to navigate, and that's definitely what we did with eHoldings. Is, like, can we tab through this infinite scrolling list, hit enter, and go into the detail record, edit it, close it, and go back and edit another one? Is that something that we can do with just a keyboard, not even a screen reader?
And with the keyboard, we're not talking about, like, shortcuts to hit edit. We're talking about, like, tabbing over and hitting enter, like, you know, people with accessibility issues would have to do.
Right. And that kind of is a good segue into creating use cases. So if you want to know the best way, like, if your app actually works, if your screen reader users, or if your keyboard users, or if your dictation users are going to be able to navigate this app, create use cases, things like actual user flows. Like, how is somebody actually going to use this app? What task are they going to want to complete? And in that case, it was like, eHoldings is like a electronic holdings management system for libraries. So they probably want to get in there, add a couple books or whatever you might have to their library and get out. So, like, a use case could be like, can I search for this thing? I'm going to search for something specific. I'm going to go through the list, find the thing that I want. I'm going to add it, close the pane, go back and remove one thing. And can they complete that flow successfully without running into any issues? Are there any blockers or any showstoppers? And I can tell you, before we did the routing management stuff, you would hit search and that was it. There was nothing else that you could do.
Right. They wouldn't even announce that there was anything that happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. And with these librarians, it's not necessarily a matter of, like, they can't see the screen. It's just that they don't use the mouse because they're power users.
Right. And so they're not even, they don't have any disabilities. But that was essential to the workflow.
Yeah, exactly. Through that change, you just, you know, lower the activation energy of that workflow by, I mean, what, three orders of magnitude?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, let me click here. All right, now I can tab, now I can tab. All right, now let me click here, now I can tab, I can tab. It's a lot, it's not as nice as just being able to completely do it through a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And through us making it super keyboard accessible, it also became super screen reader accessible. And then people who use dictation were able to work through and get through the app and use it now, which was really cool. So it really helps when you go for those things and create use cases to really figure out how a user is actually going to work through this app, right? That's the best way. Like, just get right through it with Visa Checkout, or like, can somebody buy something? Like, or if they don't have an account, can they sign up and buy? Those were some of the use cases that we had, because it turns out those are actually pretty important to the business. So that all is to say, like, you also can test your components for accessibility individually, because even at a smaller level, some of your components might have to manage focus. The best one I can think of is modals, right? When you open a modal, you should trap the focus inside of that modal, and you should be able to hit escape to close the modal. And when you close the modal, it should go back to what triggered the modal to be opened. These are all things that are individual that can be tested also. But just because your components are individually accessible does not mean your application as a whole is accessible either. So I don't want to paint the picture that, like, hey, you don't have to care about your components' accessibility individually, because you do. That really does help. But I think a lot of people miss the whole of the application rather than the individual components.
Right. The components are the individual stitches, but you have to follow the thread throughout the entire garment.
Right. Exactly.
Man, what I really want to do is I want to find out how your mom visualizes website navigation and use that as a visualization technique.
That might be design. A fun... webcast or something.
Yeah. And then see, like, could we actually use it as a tool? Because I have to imagine it's probably pretty simple. It's much simpler than, you know, what we think of when we think of a website, right? Because it has to be really condensed down to its essence.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And screen reader users aren't, they're not dumb, right? They have different ways. They know the gotchas. They know things mm-hmm. that happen. They know there are different ways of getting trolled. Like, my mom knows about focus jumping, and she gets irritated when it happens. But she knows generally of what to do. And it depends on her patience level, right? Like, if it's focus jumping, she's like, well, I don't need to use this thing. See ya. and it's just not worth the frustration. But there's different ways to navigate around. Like, if you're a real power user, you might be able to recognize that, like, the routing is inaccessible and you can navigate by headings or by regions or different landmarks. There's many different ways for users to navigate, but to use those different navigation methods, you need to have a real strong, coherent document structure, right? Your H1s have to actually be H1s, and you have buttons to have something.
Need to be buttons.
Yeah, things that they can navigate around to kind of work around those things. So yeah, it's interesting, and basically do everything you can to help those situations. Like, if you can provide semantic markup and give it a proper structure, if you can do the focus management, it's going to help everybody. It really will. And I did see when we went through the use cases and defining those things, we actually learned a little bit more about our product, because we had to put ourselves in a different seat and think about it. You know, because you get real close to it. You go through that same flow 9 million times and you pick up real power user things that you can do. Like, oh, work on that. I got this. I'll click this button. All right, we're good. Somebody that's going through it for the first time and you put yourself in that seat, it kind of opens your eyes a little bit and it makes the experience better for everyone. I think that's kind of the underlying tone there, right? That's the message.
Yeah, accessibility makes things better for everybody.
So that was a lot of content thrown at you there. We covered, you know, what is accessibility and why you'd want to do that, and then kind of like more of the basics things and how tools, automated tools, are really helpful, and they can help you pick out things like you're using improper roles and nested things, but they're not going to be able to tell you if your application is truly accessible or not, and never will. Unless we get something like a headless screen reader where you can write automated tests for in that fashion, but you're not going to get something that will just run over your app and go, yep, you're good.
Even so, it's you know, it's a matter of user experience, and you can't, that's not something you can get a thumbs up or a thumbs down to. It's just, you know, when you, as a user, come to an application, right? You know it when you see it, but it takes, I would say, until we have androids that accurately simulate human beings, I don't think we're going to actually have automated testing.
Yeah, there is a joke for accessibility consultants. It's like if you put four accessibility consultants in a room and try and tell them to give you an alt attribute for an image, you'll get four different alts. So we talked about the automated checkers, right? They're not going to get everything for you. And then we talked about single page apps specifically in the routing and how we handled the routing in a React app, and then how you can probably do it in an Angular app, and how you can do it in an Ember app and Vue, and different methods of how you can kind of attack that. We're definitely going to link to the document that I wrote in the PR, so you can kind of see like a real how of how we did it, because that will probably be helpful. And I think there was a lot of good information there. So I would like to thank both Charles and Will for being awesome co-hosts on this.
And thanks for being an awesome host.
Yeah, thanks for being an awesome host. Or I should say, you're welcome.
I tried. We are The Front Side. We do accessibility consulting and training. So if that's anything that your team needs help with, I'm more than happy to jump on a call with you to kind of figure out what your needs are and what you need to do. If you need a WCAG support statement, if you need an audit, if you just need to figure out what's the next steps for you to even do, more than happy to help you sort through that. To reach out for that, you can contact us at contact@frontside.io or sales@frontside.io or info@frontside.io. You can contact us in any different ways, and we'll be more than happy to help you. And as always, thank you, Mandy, for producing the podcast. You're awesome. And the next episode we're going to have is also still accessibility related. I'm really excited about this. It's about writing a proposal to the Unicode committee and getting it accepted. So basically writing a proposal to get an emoji added. And that's with Amberly and Amanda. They wrote 3 or 4 Unicode specs and actually got them accepted for, I believe it was sign language and deafness. So that's really cool. I'm super excited for that because they'll be the first people that I've ever talked to that have actually created an emoji and gotten it accepted.
Right. It feels
pretty cool.
Yeah, that must feel great.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So that's our next episode. And if you have any ideas or comments or anything, you can tweet us at The Front Side on Twitter, or you can contact us through any of the emails that I talked about earlier, contact@frontside.io or info@frontside.io, anything. We're always open to hearing feedback. So yeah, thanks for listening. Take it easy, everyone. Thank you.